Welcome in, everyone, to Redacted on this Tuesday. I'm Clayton Morris. So glad to have all of you here. Natalie is off again tonight, so two nights off. She's back tomorrow. Hope everyone is doing well tonight. Holy smokes. We've got a lot to talk about on this Tuesday. Hope you're all doing well. Hope you're wearing your your buffet pants tonight, your buffet sweatpants, because your news buffet sweatpants. Actually, we should start some news pants on our Redacted store, because holy smokes, do we have some stories tonight. We're going to look at the border invasion and why it is now entering phase two. Do you know what phase two is? You're about to. And wait till you hear what phase four is. It's absolutely shocking. We're going to have J.J. Carroll on, former U.S. Border Patrol agent, veteran, the Border Patrol for 24 years, is going to join us to talk about this phase two plan and how it's already rolling out under the Biden administration. This was already put in place by the Obama administration and just carried over into the meat puppet that is President Biden. We're also going to tonight look at the Black Swan event. At least that's what General Mike Flynn is calling this bridge collapse in Baltimore. Which is stunning to see. And, you know, you first sort of sit back and say, no, that's just a mechanical problem, just an accident, nothing to see here. Okay, well, we're going to dive into some details, which are pretty eye-opening about that. But General Flynn says this is a black swan event. And Laura Logan believes that we need to look at the GPS on these ships and wonder why they're unencrypted and how these can easily be hacked and taken over. So we'll look at that. We're also going to look, of course, at Diddy being raided and why it... We really need to remember that Diddy is just like the tip of the iceberg here. And this is like Hollywood, the music industry, scared crapless right now about what details are going to unfold from this investigation and this raid. People calling him the Epstein of the rap world. So we'll look at that tonight as well. So hope everyone is doing well. Let us know where you're joining us from around the world. We are live. It is 4 p.m. Eastern time today. David, Philip are here. In the background, Grim is running the graphics. How's everyone doing tonight? How's everyone doing? How's Philip? How's David doing tonight?
We're doing great.
I'm doing great. Yeah.
I just got my PlayStation 5 to broadcast remotely, wirelessly over to my computer, so now I can sit here and record gameplay. So I'm excited.
Good.
So I want to make sure I understand the timeline here. You have your PS5 directly behind you, already hooked up to a television that you could sit at your couch and play. And you spent time to rewire it so you can send it back to your computer, which is facing
just
your PS5.
I'll still sit on the couch, but I'll record here. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll let you off the hook for that one. Otherwise, I was going to give
what
you
is
a
that,
brilliant.
That Apple thing's on.
It's a brilliant.
The Apple thing is on.
What the hell is happening here? What the hell is happening here? Let's see. Tell us where you're joining us from. Slovenia. Igor is joining us from Slovenia. Steen Hem is joining us from Denmark. Good to see you. Rocco is joining us from Italy. Latvia in the house from the UK. We're also going to talk about Major Julian Assange update today. We've got a special guest on that coming up here in just a little bit. I'm just pulling up our Rumble channel here and our YouTube channel. Make sure everyone is let us know where you're joining us from, whether it's Rumble, whether it's on YouTube, whether it's on X. Hope everyone is doing well around the world today. So again, we've got a lot of news to get to here today. So yeah, we're going to talk about this border invasion and how bad it's getting right now, but it's all part of an orchestrated plan to roll out phase two of the border invasion, and it's being done, of course, at the direction and with taxpayer dollars, all orchestrated with the help of Alejandro Mayorkas in the Department of Homeland Security, and done at the discretion, of course, at the Biden administration and his overseer, President Obama. So we'll talk about that in just a second. But first, we want to tell you about our newsletter, which we had hundreds of you sign up for yesterday. So thank you for joining our brand new newsletter, redacted.inc. It comes out every day, so it's always new. Monday through Thursday, we publish the newsletter. It's a way for us to stay connected to you. So just go to redacted.inc, put in your email address, and then you will receive a welcome email. You have to confirm it, though. So it might wind up in your spam folder, your junk folder. It'll come from me. The emails, Clayton@redacted.inc. So just look for that in your junk folder, spam folder, then drag it over to your inbox, click confirm, and then tomorrow morning you'll receive the newsletter. We put a lot of hard work into it. try to bring you value every day, covering stories the mainstream media will ignore. Like one of the stories we covered in the newsletter today is about William Shakespeare. The UK government spent over £1 million to study William Shakespeare, basically saying that he has corrupted the theater for so many years because of masculine characters, white characters, masculinity, no diversity. And yes, so now they're canceling and William Shakespeare.
Wait till they find out who originally played the female characters in Shakespeare plays. That'll blow their mind.
Exactly. Right. Or wait till they find out that the lead character in Othello is black. Wait till they find that out. But they spent £1 million to figure that out. Anyway, that's the UK government. Money well spent. But we covered that in the newsletter today. Go to redacted.inc, put in your email address, and you'll receive it starting tomorrow morning. Again, redacted.inc. Well, phase two of President Biden's border invasion has begun. Phase two. What is phase two? Well, let's listen to an integration specialist from the Catholic Charities explain how phase two has just begun. Listen.
I'm Claire Roining, the Refugee Integration Specialist at Catholic Charities Milwaukee. Welcome Corps is a private refugee resettlement sponsorship program that allows private sponsors who are U.S. citizens or green card holders to help refugees who are in other countries to enter the United States through the U.S. Refugee Admissions Program. Now that the program has reached phase two, we may begin working on our applications to sponsor our friends and family.
So what in the world is going on here? And what is the Catholic Charities? How are they integrating and bringing in illegal aliens into the United States with the backing of the Biden administration? What is actually happening here right under our noses? Let's bring in J.J. Carroll. He's the author of Invaded, of course, veteran of the Customs and Border Patrol for many, many years as a supervisor. He's written an amazing book on this. And I have to say, J.J., when you sent me this information, I was just blown away. And I think Americans have no idea what's happening. So first of all, let's start at the start of this. What is phase two of this entire border invasion process?
Okay. First off, thanks for having me back on. And phase two, I've witnessed this throughout my career, not to the level that it's happening now. I could never imagine what they're doing. But I watched this phase system come through. Phase one, flood the system with millions of illegal aliens. Throughout my career, I saw this happening. Phase two is allowing permanent resident aliens called LAPRs or people with green cards and United States citizens to sponsor illegal immigrants from foreign nations into America. But the arrogance of this administration working through the NGOs have spilled the beans, if you will. Nobody knows there's phases unless you were inside the belly of the beast and watched it through your career. Phase one, millions of people coming into America illegally. Phase one doesn't end, mind you. It just continues on. But phase two is bringing more foreign nationals into America under the guise of being sponsored. And to understand what sponsorship is, if I'm I'm a U.S. citizen or a green card holder, I'm allowed to sponsor my family members to come into America, which is great. If I'm married to someone, say, from the Philippines, and I want to bring them in legally, there's a process for that. Or I'm a LAPR and I want to do that. I have no problem with that. However, what the Biden administration has done through Mayorkas and the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Service, USCIS, has done is they've labeled all of the millions of people that have been paroled in as legal residents, lawfully permanent residents. So now they bestowed that title, which is they're illegal aliens. You can call them parole, asylum, whatever. When these individuals come in, Clayton, they get about 60 to 90 days to see an immigration inspector or immigration judge. They can't see an immigration judge in New York City to 2032. California is 2027 and beyond. They're never going to see an immigration judge, so they go out of status and thus become illegal aliens. So the USCIS has bestowed legal resident status on illegal aliens. So now illegal aliens can sponsor their family members to come into America.
So illegal immigrants now have legal authority to sponsor other illegal immigrants, even though they're not here legally, and they're still awaiting even seeing an immigration judge, which is pushed off by 10, 15, 20 years because they're all backed up so much that they can't do it.
Correct. That's absolutely correct. So the Center for Immigration Studies, CIS.org, one of their investigative journalists named Nyla Rush did an article on this, and I agree with her completely because I've seen the stats. I know what's happening. So Biden administration has taken the countries of Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, and Venezuela, and they shortened the term down to CHNVs, okay? They are now saying that those individuals from those countries that have been paroled into America are now legal residents and can bring all their family members in, just from those nations. However, there's a cutout that says those illegal aliens from those CHNVs can sponsor people or family members despite them being from those from other nations. Meaning, if I'm from Venezuela, but my family member's from Iran, I can bring that person in from Iran. I'm not subject to that. What's even more malicious is the USCIS has now designated temporary protective status, TPS, DACA recipients, and deferred enforced deportation, which is DED. Those people under those blankets, those are all temporary, 18-month, you can stay in America. They've deemed them as legal residents as well. Why? Let me give you an example how devious this is. 2 weeks ago, President Biden did an executive order and gave deferred enforced deportation coverage to 6,000 Palestinian illegal aliens. 6,000 illegal aliens from Palestine here in America now are forbidden from being deported. They cannot be through deportations. Those 6,000 can now petition for all their family members living in the Gaza and in Palestine into America.
So what you're saying here is that all of these American, or all of these now parolees can sponsor up to 4 illegal immigrants per people. So if we're talking 10 million people have come into the United States, and I know your number's in the book, I mean, it's just staggering how many people are already here. That basically could add an additional 40 million people into the United States.
Yes, but let's hold on 1 second, just so you understand. In the old system, if I wanted to sponsor someone, I had to fill out a government form I-134. It's a declaration of financial support. So I could only maybe bring in one person, maybe my father, my brother, because I only had the financial support to bring in one person. Well, DHS now said, hey, you don't have to provide that form anymore. Because the first question people should ask is, how is an illegal alien from Sudan that's living in the detention facility or a hotel or comfort inn in Boston, Mass, how are they going to provide support for family members? Well, the DHS now claims that that all the NGOs, starting with Catholic Charities, they can be the sponsors, the financial sponsors. So instead of bringing just my brother over, I can bring my father, my mother, my brother and sister. I can bring their children. I can bring their spouses. I can bring grandma and grandpa because there's no limitation on my financial support. The NGOs are now the backstop for that.
So I was going to ask you how the Catholic Charities fits into this. So these NGOs are being paid for by the Biden administration in order to facilitate this. They're making enormous amounts of money. And this is how the Biden administration gets away with it, right? They can pass it off to non-government organizations. So it's not the Biden administration. Yes. It's these private organizations. It's these 503C, whatever, charities, et cetera. And by all accounts, they're supposed to be doing great work. Catholic Charities, that sounds like a great thing. So who is the Catholic Charities? What do they do?
Catholic Charities they are not affiliated, they say, with Catholic Church, but I'm a Catholic and I'm very aware Catholic Charities is tied at the hip with the Catholic Church. They are a nonprofit refugee resettlement group. That's probably, if I had to say, their main thrust in their charitable work is they resettle refugees. Now, that's not refugees like you and I think about back in the day, like people from Cambodia. We're talking about anyone that's illegal is considered a refugee. Let me explain how much money. Since 15 years prior to Biden taking office, Catholic Charities have received $3.5 billion from the U.S. government. $3.5 billion. Estimates now say between, by the time Joe Biden took office to now, that they've received another $3 billion. So we're encroaching on $7 billion. So when I tell you that the NGOs, be it United Way, Jewish Family Service, Lutheran Family Services, and all the hundreds of mom and pops, like literally mom and pops, we're paying taxpayer money to the NGOs. The NGOs are now using that money to bring illegal aliens into our country that are sponsored by them. By Catholic Charities becomes the sponsor of millions. So Clayton, so your audience understands. So I bring in my father, my mother, my brother, and sister. Well, once they get in, they turn around and they say, well, I need my spouse and my kids. And I need my grandma and grandpa. I need my aunts and uncles. So that 1, 2, 3, 4 turns in to 10, 15, 20 relatives. And here's another sick thing that you need to understand. Well, I'd like you to understand. I worked 24 years in the Border Patrol. I have Social Security. You're a working man. You're pouring into Social Security. You got truckers, 30 years, construction workers, nurses, stockbrokers, whatever. When I bring in my illegal alien grandma that's never, never worked a day in her life, do you know that she gets the maximum Social Security benefit payout?
What?
So she'll get more money than me? Yes.
What?
Absolutely. So when we're doing COLA, cost of living increases for our grandmas and grandpas that are living paycheck to paycheck, and we're giving them a COLA increase of 1.5% or 0%, the illegal alien grandma from Sudan and Mexico, wherever on the planet Earth, she gets more money than the person that's worked her whole life.
I mean, this is infuriating. I mean, and is she given a Social Security number? How is this possible?
Yes, they all get Social Security numbers because once they come in, they become legal residents. They will get a Social Security number. They can work. And you say, well, I want them to work. Well, yeah, I want them to work too. But let's take an example from the little town in Iowa 2 weeks ago that has 8,000 residents. 1,200 of those residents work at Tyson's meatpacking plant. They got fired, and Tyson meatpacking plant replaced all 1,200 with refugees.
Jeez.
So that small town has been devastated. Will never recover. But this is the world we live in, Clayton. It is insanity what's happened. But you go back to the phases, just so we're clear. Once phase two gets fully implemented, so you have phase one and phase two, those phases are never going to stop. They're going to continue. Phase three, and you're going to start to hear it real soon, is a drumbeat, coordinated drumbeat between Republicans, Democrats, and the media. The system is broken. The system is broken. We need amnesty. The fourth phase is amnesty. And it's not, do we have amnesty? It's how many tens of millions do we give amnesty to? Then it's over.
They can say, we don't have the agents. We don't have the ICE agents. We don't have the people to go out and arrest all of these individuals and deport them anymore. And we're so overwhelmed. The only response is to start fresh. The system is broken. Just amnesty, blanket amnesty for 50 million people who've come from around the world.
Absolutely. And you say, well, that's theoretical. No, it's not. We go back to President Reagan. The exact same thing happened under President Reagan when he gave amnesty. The same thing. The system's broken. We're overwhelmed. We'll never be able to find all these people. And they were talking about 2 million. They weren't talking about 40, 50 million people.
No, and you talk about in your book, I want everyone, again, read JJ's book. It's called Invaded. I'm on chapter 4 right now of the book. Natalie just finished it. And I was blown away. I mean, chapter 3, I was pulling my hair out, thinking about what the Obama years did. I couldn't believe it. And how much they just opened up the floodgates and were giving this sort of new parole status to individuals. But I guess what I want to say about that is that the amount of resources that are being taken away from the Border Patrol on purpose, like it's all engineered that way. And then of course, President Trump comes in, issues a number of executive orders. Suddenly the Border Patrol, you guys are, oh my God, this is amazing. We now have the resources. We close down the border. all the people coming across are being arrested and turned back to their countries. The home countries themselves are also now, because of under threat of us pulling up foreign aid against these countries, are now taking these individuals back and standing up their own border protection to make sure that they're not leaving. And on top of that, ICE is able to go out and do deportation flights, as you catalog in your book. So ICE was on a regularly going door to door, finding these individuals and flying them back to their home country. Criminals, you name it. Get them out of here. And so this argument that we can't do it is total garbage. We've done it. We know we can do it if we just put the resources in place. You say we're spending $3 billion on Catholic charities. President Trump asked for $15 billion for a border wall. Congress gave him $5 billion, but we've now spent $6 billion on Catholic charities to bring people into the United States. It's insanity. So I guess my point is, you point out in your book, it's a uniparty, Republicans and Democrats, and that's what we're about to see in phase four. They're coming together. They both want illegal immigration in this country. The dirty secret, as I've spoken to many of these individuals, the dirty secret on the Republican side is just what we saw with Tyson, is we're going to fire people that we have to pay higher wages to, Americans. We're going to replace them with illegal aliens. And then if ICE comes in and arrests them, the dirty little secret, we saw this at chicken plants in Georgia, I've covered this for years, is that ICE will come in. There's a sort of a relationship here. ICE will come in and arrest a group of them, send them back, and then another batch will just come in and they'll replace them. And these Republican donors make a lot of money funding, they send a lot of money to these Republican candidates. So it's Democrats and Republicans that are responsible for this. It's a uniparty, isn't it?
It is absolutely uniparty. And just to give you an example, what happened this past weekend, Clayton, the $1.2 trillion budget was passed.
Right.
With no money to the border. However, I'm going to read you these countries: Jordan, Lebanon, Egypt, Tunisia, and Oman. They received, starting out, this is all what we know, Yao. They've been given $380 million to do what in those five countries? To secure their borders. These people make me disgusted. They're traitors. You got Speaker Johnson has not done anything to shut the border down. I don't know if you saw in El Paso, National Guard got overrun by 300 single adult military age men. Our military got overrun. Let that sink in for a second. And tell me, where in American history have American military ever been overrun and there was no reaction? None. Just let them come in. And this is in the great state of Texas under the great border governor Abbott, who does everything half-assed. And you're right, this is a uniparty. And let's talk about this. Mayorkas was voted by like one person to be impeached. Where's the impeachment? We haven't even heard about it. We're being invaded at a clip of approximately 7,000 to 15,000 illegal aliens every single day, and not one politician is stopping it. It's unconscionable. But once you realize, Clayton, and I have to do this because it gets so upset and you get so frustrated, but once you put on the glasses of a traitor, of someone that hates the country, everything that you're seeing and witnessing makes sense. It's clear as day. All of these decisions they make aligns perfectly with the destruction of America. And there is no argument if that's happened or not. It is happening.
You're working on a new documentary called Treason. And I want to give a shout out here because you're trying to put this documentary together about Biden's open borders. And I'd love for you to tell our audience about it and how people can contribute. You guys have set up a Give, Send, Go link. We'll link it up in the description here. So if people want to contribute to get this documentary made and pushed out there before the election in 2024, they can do that. So we'll link that up. So tell us about Treason.
Well, first off, thanks for bringing that up. And because I'm very, very excited and very passionate about this project, we look at the border through the lens of looking south all the time. All we get is pictures of people bonsaiing the border, the trash. I want to show that. I want to see that. But I want to, if you can envision, I want to turn the camera north. And I want to ask the question, what we just saw behind us is treason. I'm now going to take you into America. the big cities, Chicago, New York, DC, Oakland, San Francisco. But I'm also going to take you in to Whitewater, Wisconsin. I'm going to take you into a small town in Iowa. I'm going to take you down into Alabama, and I'm going to show you what treason looks like. What is the manifestation in crime, in jobs, in social decay, in social benefit decay? I want you to see what treason is. And I'm going to be interviewing. I have interviews lined up out for the whole summer. I'm talking to chiefs of police in local small towns. I'm talking to city activists that I would have nothing in common with politically. Now we are completely aligned. They've seen their communities devastated by illegal aliens and all of the funds going there. So over the summer, we have it lined out. We have a very packed production schedule, but it will end and we will release this in October before the election. Because I think it is paramount that Americans understand, instead of looking south all the time, turn around and see what's happening to your country. What does this treason look like in the manifestation of crime and destruction? And it will be shocking to the American people to see their American brothers and sisters being turned away from homeless shelters, being turned away because there's no more money, losing their jobs that they belong to and have done for 20, 25 years to an illegal alien from Ecuador by the thousands. So that is what we're going to do. We have a tight budget schedule, a tight budget. So we are going to the Give, Send, Go, and just go to Give, Send, Go. The link will be available. And I appreciate you doing that, Clayton. And it's going to be a powerful, it's going to be artistically beautiful, but it's going to be a powerful message of what does America look like and where are we hurtling to?
Well, I encourage all of our audience to go there. We'll link it up in the description to be able to visit there and to, you know, just if you've got $5 laying around, I mean, I'm sure people have like $5 in their seat, the couch cushions they might not know about, you know, just to give $5 or a few bucks here or 20 bucks, whatever it is, to this Give, Send, Go account to help get this documentary made. Our audience is amazing, and I think this could really hopefully help the election, open up Americans' eyes to what's actually happening out there to our beautiful country right now. So we'll link that up and encourage everyone to check it out if they want to donate and be a part of that. JJ, as always, great to see you. This is unbelievable. Again, entering phase two right now, and you heard it here. Phase three and four, amnesty in the United States for the tens of millions of illegal aliens unless we put a stop to this right now. JJ, great to see you. Thank you so much for opening our eyes.
Thank you, Clayton.
It's just devastating. I mean, it absolutely is just devastating. I mean, how many of you are, I mean, how many of you are seeing this unfolding and seeing the system play out, this plan playing out in front of us right now? I mean, this is exactly part of the plan. And I think to know that amnesty is the step, it all makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Like it makes perfect sense that this would be the path that they would go and they would throw their hands up and say, amnesty, because we can't fix it. We can't fix it. We're too far gone at this point.
Yes, it's interesting. We don't actually see much of it here, like in the Portland metro area, but it's kind of hard to tell because it's hard to separate like illegal immigration with just like the opioid epidemic from their sort of like failed drug policy that they've now tried to rescind, you know, like it's like the homelessness problem is so bad here. It's hard to tell, you know, like, yeah. it's just not something we see a lot. At least I don't.
All right, a lot of Americans, very, very concerned. I heard from a viewer last night, Todd wrote to me and said, you know, my wife and I are very scared. My wife wants to get a gun safe, wants to have a safe next to the bed with the biometric trigger, and he's like, I'm very concerned. We're worried what's happening in our neighborhood. We're worried what's happening in our community with this rise of illegal immigrants. It's terrifying. It really is terrifying. They're taking over the country on purpose, and they don't really care at all about the crime. We're going to talk more about that in the coming days here on the show. We will absolutely. But tonight on the show, we're going to talk more about this Baltimore bridge collapse, which is really stunning. I've been over the Francis Scott Key Bridge many, many times. My father is from Baltimore. So to hear this story, it's very, very mysterious. So at first it was like, okay, mechanical accident, nothing to see here. Okay. Then you start digging into the story. Then you have General Mike Flynn calling this a black swan event. and you start to put in a lot of interesting pieces together, and it raises a few questions. And we'll show you those things, and you can make your own determination about it. The White House is saying nothing to see here, total accident, but we'll show you the evidence, we'll show you the videos, and we'll talk about it here on the show. We're also going to look at Julian Assange tonight, and the appeal has been somewhat granted in a way, a victory perhaps for the Assange family, and Julian Assange maybe not to be extradited to the United States. We're going to dive more deeply into this story with a special guest who's been in the courthouse the entire time. And been able to see and hear right from directly from the judge. In just a moment, we'll get there. And we're also going to talk about P. Diddy and the raid and the fallout that we're experiencing right now. We're going to go through a lot of interesting details that have emerged over the past 24 hours there, and some new lawsuit information, too, that implicates the royal family. We'll get to that in a second. But first, we're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a new candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, just match it with Indeed. That's right. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, messaging, so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. I know a bunch of our audience uses Indeed for hiring, and because it's so easy to use, and it's just been really incredible for them to find the right candidates quickly and easily, leveraging over 140 million qualified preferences every day. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. So here's what you need to do. If you'll get $75 sponsored job credit to your jobs to get your jobs more visibility by going to Indeed.com/redacted. Just go to Indeed.com/redacted right now. Support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on Redacted. So that's Indeed.com/redacted. Terms and conditions apply. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Get a $75 sponsored job credit today. Our thanks to Indeed. Well, General Mike Flynn says the bridge collapse in Baltimore is a black swan event. Now, it's much bigger than we know. So let's unpack this. And I have to say, I've done everything over the past 24 hours since this collapse happened in the early morning hours to say nothing to see here, total accident, mechanical problem, of course. It looks like a mechanical failure, a power outage, nothing to see here, don't worry about it. Then General Mike Flynn has to go and call this a black swan event and says, look more deeply into this. So we have. And there's more than meets the eye. So what is a black swan event? Well, a black swan event is, you know, you're just chugging along, looking at normal, you know, white swans that you normally see. Then suddenly, everything seems predictable and normal, and then bam, giant black swan comes out of nowhere. Something totally unexpected blindsides you. It usually happens economically, right? We see that obviously with what happened in the 2008 collapse. That's exactly what a black swan event looks like. That's the essence of a swan event. Unexpected, impactful, often leaving us scrambling to make sense of what in the world just happened. So here's Mike Flynn's post on X this afternoon. This is a black swan event, he says. Black swans normally come out of the world of finance, not military. The standard operating procedures for all U.S. ports, harbors, and bays that transit commerce and military activities are supposed to maintain an incredible level of discipline, rigor, and awareness for these very type of events not to occur ever. Yet here we are. There are harbor masters for every single one of these transit points in America that are in charge of assuring the safety of navigation. Start there, he says. So start there. Talk to the harbor masters. Don't necessarily look at the boat itself. That's maybe a red herring. Look at the harbor masters. Look at the infrastructure. Look at the electrical infrastructure. Look at the computers. Was it hacked? So look at that information, not just the boat itself, perhaps. So what do we know? Well, for one thing, we know the captain of the ship, or the ship's master, is Ukrainian. That's interesting. So here you can find that out easily by going to BalticShipping.com. You can punch in the information as we did here at Redacted. Go to the dolly. The name of the ship is the Dolly. There you can see where it's currently sitting. It's now sitting there covered by a bridge right in Baltimore in the Chesapeake Harbor in Baltimore. And there is the ship's master. He is Ukrainian. Interesting. And UK Telegram channels today posting congratulations to great work and to expect more surprises in Europe, too, unless we approve more aid to Ukraine. Maybe it's a total coincidence here, these Ukrainian Telegram posts. This is a beautiful work all over the world without hesitation. If you don't accept the aid package, then get it. Look forward to our surprises throughout Europe. We will teach you to defend democracy and help those who need it.
Huh.
So maybe
I haven't seen anything like that.
Yep. Yeah, maybe maybe this is just some like Telegram opportunists, you know, on different Telegram channels just trying to play into this, right? Try to scare us. Or maybe there's something more to it. Who knows? But those posts exist on Ukrainian it's Telegram like the, channels.
It's like the Goodfellas. You got this? F you, pay me. You do this? F you, pay me. Like,
yeah.
You know, we're that kind of attitude.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And there would have been a Chesapeake Bay pilot on board also. So anytime you're going in and out of one of these harbors, you're going in, you know, even if you're going into Norway and you're going into Stavanger, like the port of Stavanger in Norway, you have to wait outside of the channel. You have to wait until the Stavanger pilot comes on board. Just the same you have to do here in the Chesapeake Bay. Chesapeake Bay pilot needs to assist the master and is on board. They know everything about this harbor. They know every detail of it, and they are going to guide you out. You're from Singapore? A Chesapeake Bay pilot will be on board and guiding the ship out. And that's what was happening. The ship was being guided out of port on its way out to sea and transporting large amounts of cargo. So it was leaving. It was almost about to leave. And here's the video of the incident. So here's, we're going to watch this incident kind of in real time with some highlights on how this all breaks down here. So at about the first reel, we sped it up a little bit here. It sped up a little bit here. You can see at about the 12-second mark. So this is going to go on for about 30 seconds. Okay, there's power loss number one at about 12 seconds. Okay, then at about 22 seconds, it recovers power. So it comes back on here. And then you see black smoke coming out of the engine, the funnel. And then immediate evasive maneuver, the stack, yeah. Then immediate evasive maneuvers take place. Helicopter, images show that, in fact, one of the anchors was dropped on the port side. And there you have the smash and collapse of the bridge. Now, we also know, according to the mayor, that as a result of that, when they called in a mayday call a few seconds before impact, they were able to divert traffic on the bridge, thankfully, and workers were able to stop and halt traffic coming across the bridge, which is why more people were not trapped on the bridge. There weren't more cars on the bridge at that time. So at least they had enough to say, mayday, mayday, where we've lost control, we don't have control of the ship, get people off the bridge, and they were able to prevent at least a lot more people from being killed or missing as a result of this. So, but this is interesting. So journalist Michael Yon tweeted this afternoon, and this is a more detailed analysis of the ship leaving. Okay, so it's coming off the dock there and heading out into the open ocean. And you can see here, though, how it changes course right before it loses power, which is interesting. So now this is where things, to me, get really interesting. Why 2 minutes before, keep playing it if you would, or did it stop? Yeah. So, all right, now right here, you're going to see it change course before losing power and colliding. So why did it change course aiming directly into the pylon? It's a curious question, right? So why did it change course at that point? We don't know. Why did it change course? Now, if you lose power and you have to use some sort of a backup steering system, in some cases, you might be steering in the opposite direction of what you're used to. It's a reverse steering system. Now, I don't know if this ship was set up that way or not. We'll have this will be part of the investigation, I'm sure. So, and sometimes with backup power, that is the case with a steering column.
And also, isn't it kind of curious, like, those pylons have to be, like, they had to think about a boat running into those when they built that bridge, right? So one pylon going out collapses that much of the bridge? That seems like, that doesn't seem right. You know what I mean? Like, a boat could take out a pylon, like a whole bottom of the bridge. That doesn't make sense.
Well, you know, U.S. bridge infrastructure is built like 200 years ago. I don't know when the Francis Scott Key Bridge was. Yeah, I don't know when this bridge was built, actually, to be honest with you. I mean, I've driven over it since, I think, childhood. Like, I grew up, my father's from Baltimore. I used to go down to the Chesapeake Bay and go crabbing. You know, so me going down to, like, St. Michael's, going down to Chesapeake Harbor. One of my favorite foods in the world is Maryland Blue steamed crabs. It is my actually, I will say it's my favorite food in the world. And so special times with my father going down there. And he used to go crabbing as a child. I don't know when this bridge was built, but I can tell you I remember driving over it for many, many years of my life. And also
Go
ahead.
I was going to say, I doubt when it was built, though, it was built for like, what wasn't that, like 120,000 tons of ship that hit it?
Right. Yeah, so and maybe someone can let us in though. 1977. Okay, so I was born 1976. Yeah, so it's been around as long as I've been alive. So interesting. Yeah, I don't know exactly what impact it's meant to adhere, you know, absorb one of these massive ships. Doubtful. I don't know that anything could stop that. You know, can you build something that would prevent this? I don't know. I mean, think about this ship hitting any bridge in America would wipe it out. If this thing hits the Golden Gate Bridge, it would probably collapse the Golden Gate Bridge, right? You would think the massive size of this thing disrupting one pylon and all of it comes down like a house of cards. I don't know. Anyway, so now I want to play this for you. So that was, you saw the track coming out and you saw it changing its direction at about 2 minutes left before impact. But now I want to show you this 8x speed video that's been making the rounds this afternoon as well, which I found interesting and we'll share it here, which shows how much it had to divert itself. Look at or how it moved position. Watch this. So let's keep playing this here. Like, look how much it had to swerve in order to hit this pylon. Total change of direction when you see it in that kind of speed with that kind of movement. Really crazy to look at. As Laura Logan tweeted this afternoon, the GPS systems that drive these boats are not encrypted. Journalist Laura Logan, one of the best journalists in the world. The GPS systems that drive these boats are not encrypted. When a Navy ship crashed into a large cargo ship not that long ago, it was a cyber attack that made that happen. I know they're saying that this was not nefarious, but how do they know so quickly? Right, that's a great question. How do they know so quickly? We keep over the past week, we sort of been joking about the Biden administration, like really they were so quick to tell us that ISIS was responsible for the Russian theater attack, right? They told us within like minutes that was the case. Yet they still can't tell us who killed John F. Kennedy. We still can't provide details about the 9/11 attacks. They can't tell us who blew up the Nord Stream pipeline, but they were that fast to tell us that it was ISIS. They were lying to us, of course. So
the same way they immediately found the passports on 9/11.
Like, yeah, they're laying in dust.
All the rubble.
It's right there. There's a passport. Here are the passports of this guy. Right? Look at this. It's not even charred or anything. But let's take a closer look at one last thing here. Why would explosions go off at these locations? So I've highlighted here in white where you're noticing the bridge. Now I've slowed it down a little bit here. And here's the first collision, and you'll notice an explosion. Then here you notice another one, and here another one. Watch this again. So here we go again. I'm going to replay it a second time for you. So on the left side here, first collapse, and could this be some sort of, why would there be an explosion? A transformer blowing? Or is it something worse? And in this piece as well with an explosion. What is that? President Biden says nothing to see here. Don't worry about it. He travels this way all the time, you know, and there's nothing to see here. There's nothing nefarious as far as they can tell.
And we're going to rebuild that port together. This was a terrible accident. At this time, we have no other indication, no other reason to believe there's any intentional act here.
No intentional act here. Okay. We do know that this same ship, though, had a history of events. This was in Antwerp in Belgium. This exact same ship in back in 2016, the Dali, ran into a quay on July 11th, 2016, as it tries to exit the North Sea. So it kind of scraped the back of it. I wonder how often these things happen. Like, is this a common occurrence here? Or is this, you know, is this a rare thing for one of these massive container ships to do this? So it hit the quay. I mean, I know that they have those big rubber pylons to protect and so forth, but here it is. It was cleared for, you know, it was cleared for duty and went back out to sea. And of course, at the time, it was under a different sea captain. It was not under the helm of a Ukrainian, different captain at the time when this happened back then as well. So that happened in 2016. So a black swan event. More that we don't know here. We're going to have to look more deeply into the harbor masters and the connections with the ship. Who was monitoring this the whole way? And was there any electrical cyber attack that took place on board the ship? Laura Logan brings up a great point, but those are all of the facts right now. That's what we know about the direction of the ship, those explosions that took place. Were they simply transformers blowing on those particular pieces of the bridge that fell and broke apart? Why were there multiple power outages, and what happened to the backup system on this? And what about the Chesapeake Bay pilot who was on board? What can they tell us about what happened here? So all of these things, and the Biden White House saying nothing to see here, nothing nefarious. Do you think that's the case? Let us know in the comments below what you think about this. We've got more news to get to here on your Tuesday. We're going to look at the Julian Assange case with a special guest who's been in the courtroom the entire time and who's been covering this extensively. We're very excited to have this guest on our show here in just a minute to talk about the Assange perhaps victory, which we hope is the case. We'll see if he ends up, you know, winds up in the United States. We hope that that's not the case. And then we're all going to look deeply into this P. Diddy raid, because a lot of new details coming out this afternoon, which we will get to in a minute. But first, are you tired of feeling tired? Do you always hit that snooze button and slam your head straight back down on the pillow? With all of the problems you have, you know, to take care of at work, at home, with your family, your friends, it's no wonder you feel so tired. We need to get that 7 to 8 hours of sleep every night. Without it, it can be detrimental. But if you really stop to think about it, who takes care of you right now? Magnesium Breakthrough is an all-natural supplement that helps you reduce fatigue, sleep more peacefully. It even strengthens muscles and improves your heart and brain function. While most magnesium supplements aren't full spectrum, Magnesium Breakthrough is the only magnesium supplement on the market that contains the optimal ratio of all 7 essential types of magnesium. Imagine having the strength and energy to get out of bed every morning and face the day boldly, courageously. So if you want to try and feel more energized right now, get the best night's sleep you've had in a long time, go to bioptimizers.com/redacted. See on your screen there, it's bioptimizers.com/redacted. And your body will thank you. You just got to give them a try. Try some of this magnesium. I'm telling you what do you have to lose? You know, you're going to be able to use that promo code and save some money by going to bioptimizers.com/redacted. Really help you get a great night's sleep, feel better, feel energized, and feel refreshed. Again, buyoptimizers.com/redacted. Well, a major update today in the extradition case of Julian Assange was handed down today from a UK court in London. Will he be extradited to the United States after all, where he will surely die in a supermax prison or worse? If you can imagine that. Independent journalist Richard Medhurst has been covering the story from the very beginning. He's been in the courtroom in London repeatedly and was handed these documents today by the court. And we were all waiting with bated breath, Richard, at 10:30 Eastern Time, London time today. What were we going to hear? So it's 66 pages. You've gone through all the details of it. What did we learn today? What is the fate of Julian Assange?
Well, it's a bittersweet victory, and it reminds me of the original ruling in 2021. So on the surface, it looks good. It sounds great that they blocked the extradition, but it's only it's a temporary thing. And if you've gone through the ruling like I have, there are tons of things actually that are really not good. Just for starters, for example, they've thrown out the bulk of the case. They've said, on all of these grounds, there's no appeal. For one of them, for example, is the CIA plotting to kill him. They said it's just not relevant. Things like the fact that he's being extradited for a political opinion, they say, it's not relevant, and which is very shocking. So it's not just about the CIA. I know that one attracts a lot of headlines, but just in general, every point was quite shocking. And so the way it goes now is that the United States, they have about 3 weeks to present assurances that they will not kill Julian Assange, that they will not give him the death penalty, because in the United States, it's a capital offense, whereas in Britain, it's illegal to extradite someone to a country that has the death penalty. So, or at least that is certain to give someone the death penalty. So that's number one. Number two, they have to give assurances that Julian Assange will be treated like an American citizen, that he will be given First Amendment rights, which might sound quite shocking, because if he's being prosecuted under U.S. law, then why isn't he given protections under U.S. law? It's very unfair application of things. They also have to get the Secretary of State, which is the Foreign Secretary, to also get adequate assurances from the United States. So if they don't do this, then they will just automatically allow Assange to appeal on those grounds. However, if the United States, let's imagine that they give some piece of paper to the British government, and the British government is pleased, then we basically have no grounds left to appeal on, and it gets very ugly after that. You see, so even if it looks good on the surface, during all this time, Julian Assange is still stuck in Belmarsh, which is like the British equivalent of Guantanamo Bay, so he's still suffering. No matter what the victories are in court, and unless he's discharged, it's just a continuation of prosecuting a journalist. That's what it is.
So hopefully you can help me unpack this a little more and explain it to me as if I'm a fifth grader, because it's so complex here. So let's just unpack a few pieces of this here. Number one, while this is happening, he's still stuck in Belmarsh. They're not just going to let him out to be with his family while this whole process is still unfolding. He's been there for, 4 years now?
Yes, almost five, actually. The anniversary of when they dragged him out is 5 years in April. So that's correct. He's in prison. And it's not just a prison. It's the worst prison in England. And he's not actually been convicted of a crime. And it's for a bail violation originally. No one in England, a bail violation is not a serious thing. You don't get sent to sometimes you don't even get sent to prison. And you certainly don't get the maximum 51 weeks, which they gave him. And you certainly don't get sent to Belmarsh, which is it's a category A, so a maximum security prison. Usually you have people like rapists, Al-Qaeda members. It's funny because Al-Qaeda members in Belmarsh prison have been treated better than Julian Assange in the past. So, yeah.
So he'll still remain there. A friend of the show, Tucker Carlson, told us, when he saw him, he was shocked. I mean, he was shocked at what he looked like. So he's absolutely suffering.
He is. I've seen him several times in court. Almost every single time he was there. This last hearing, so on February 20th and 21st, he applied to come. He was given permission, but he ended up not coming of his own accord because he was too sick. He had a cough, a persistent cough. And one time when I saw him, it took me a minute to realize that I was looking at him. I thought it was someone else. I don't know, my brain just didn't register because we were just getting so, we're just sitting down. We're just getting the whole thing started. I didn't understand it was him. He looked so old. I swear to God, it took me a minute. And that's how bad that's how bad of a condition he's in.
So that's that part of it. He'll remain there, unfortunately, while this appeals process is playing out. On the American side, they have to provide these assurances that he won't be killed. So they have a 3-week deadline to do that. I imagine they'll probably hit that deadline. And then what? What does the Assange team do next?
They can reply. There's also a fixed deadline for that. So they can then reply to these assurances, and then the Americans can reply to their reply, if that makes sense.
So back and forth, back and forth. And
like
then,
exactly.
And then we'll get a decision as to whether or not he can go forward with an appeal. I mean, it seems like they're saying, we don't really want to handle this. This should be open to an appeal. Like you have valid arguments here. Before we get to the appeal, we're waiting on the Americans to say that they're not going to kill you.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's back and forth, and then there could be on May 20th a hearing. If Assange's team present valid points to the points put forward by the Americans in their appeal. Yeah.
It's insane.
It's really ridiculous. It's so absurd. And you know what's weird to me is that the case is very clear cut. You know, it should have been thrown out. I mean, just to give you an example, when you're spied on, like the government spies on you for and then they try to use that in court. Even if you're charged with a, I don't know, parking violation, it would be thrown out. You know, never mind CIA spying on you and you're inside an embassy and you're in a foreign country. I mean, there's so many layers of illegality and criminality to this case. It's truly, truly stunning. It beggars belief how it's been allowed to continue. And it really makes a mockery of English courts. You know, when I go in there and I sit there, I don't feel like I'm really sitting in an independent judiciary. Some of the court staff, I was even talking with them, and they asked me that question, which to me was already like they know what's going on. You know, I'm not saying that it wasn't one of the lawyers or something like that, but the people in the court who work there, they know that it's not an independent judiciary, that it's being run by the Americans. I always draw to this hypocrisy. Like, if you're going to charge someone with a U.S. law, how can you say that once he's in America, you won't apply the full United States Constitution and rights to him? You know, it's so unfair. It's so biased and unbalanced.
So a few key things that you mentioned there are being thrown out. I was stunned. The CIA piece, yes, that has obviously made a lot of headlines. CIA Director Mike Pompeo targeting Julian Assange for assassination, right?
Yeah.
That's a huge piece and a compelling argument to not be sent to the United States. They were trying to actively kill me. The other piece, though, I thought was stunning as well, this idea that they weren't going after him for political reasons. Like, that, they don't think that part of the argument is relevant? What? That's the,
yes,
that's the crux of it.
Yeah, that was in the ruling today, which, again, I laugh because, you know, it's so ridiculous. They also said something else that basically the idea that, well, they're trying to kidnap me, or let's say it's in the third present. So let's say that the idea they're trying to kidnap Julian Assange and take him to America doesn't matter if he's extradited. Yes, well, that's the point. They actually wrote this. They said we don't need to look at it or consider it because if the extradition goes ahead, well, guess what? He can't be kidnapped anymore because he's already in America. it's really unbelievable.
So is this a victory for the Assange team, a small victory?
It is a small victory. It is a small victory. But, you know, I want to talk about these assurances because I've done a significant amount of work on them. So inside of the courtroom, when we were still at the stage where Assange had won, he blocked the extradition because of his health, and now the Americans are trying to appeal it. And so to appeal it, they said, we'll treat him nicely. Now, in 2024, we know that these don't suffice. But back in 2021, Assange's team were trying to show examples to the court of people who had been extradited to America. And then once they were in the United States, the United States government, basically threw the assurances they had given in the trash, out the window. And one of these cases is a man called David Mendoza. And he was sent from Spain to the United States on condition that once he's tried, and if he's convicted, he goes back to serve a sentence in Spain. Very clear-cut case. And he didn't just get assurances, because we have to remember that assurance sounds bigger than it is. It's a non-binding piece of paper. It's just a piece of paper. It's not a contract. But that guy, Mendoza, he got an actual contract, a legally binding contract. I published it with the signature of this woman who works at the U.S. Embassy, Vice, and I published the DOJ and the State Department documents, these classified documents, proving that he had been given this deal And then when he got to America, they violated the deal. And then he had to sue the Spanish government and the American government. And keep in mind, he's a dual citizen. He's an American and a Spanish citizen. So both of these are his country. And, you know, I just want to be clear that this man was not a political target. Mendoza was not a political target like Assange. It was just about something for marijuana in a state where it's legal now on top of it. So it's not even comparable to this state, you know, this kind of political case Assange is in. And they still violated that. So what do you think they're going to do to Assange? Would they not violate it if they have a history of violating agreements? Absolutely. You know, and I think it's wrong for the British government to just blindly trust the American government, especially when this case was cited in the court. So I'm shocked that the judges back then looked at it and found nothing wrong with it. There's everything wrong with it, everything from A to Z. And so, you know, as I said, multiple layers of criminality, multiple layers of irregularities here, both on the British and the American side.
Yes, the British government absolutely under the thumb of the United States, doing its bidding once again, as we see, whether it's in Ukraine or here in this situation.
Yeah.
And I'll get you out of here on this, Richard, which is the argument from the Assange team, of course, is that they were that they will not be safe, of course, when they get to the United States. And the United States has a track record of this, that Julian Assange was only been there for, I think, like one afternoon for like a brief amount of time. He wasn't even in the United States, or maybe it was a few days. That's it. He wasn't there for very long.
Yeah. I think maybe once work or something, but he never lived or worked in the United States.
On top of that, the argument the United States has made, of course, is that people's lives were ruined, and this put members of the CIA or others in danger, the U.S. military in danger by releasing these WikiLeaks documents and showing the world these war crimes.
My answer is so what?
Right. Yeah, on top of it. Yeah. First part of it is, yeah, so what? Second part of it is, so people are carrying out war crimes and we're concerned about those individuals. First part, yeah, right. So what? Second part is, there's no evidence of that at all. In this document, did they throw that part of it out, or was that relevant in this argument, in this decision today?
So they brought it up, of course. And they are basically saying that yes, the judge in the lower court was correct to basically agree that yes, Assange, he exposed state crimes, but it doesn't matter. So that's it. That's the ruling of today, and they're agreeing with the lower ruling. They're saying yeah, Assange exposed these gross, you know, state crimes. How Britain was training death squads in Bangladesh. How the American government was subverting European governments who are trying to try CIA agents. How they were, how CIA agents were torturing people in European citizens, kidnapping them off of the street and just, you know, taking them to black sites. They mention all of this in today's ruling. They agree and they acknowledge all of it, but they say it doesn't matter. It's not the substance of the crime. And my favorite part is like, what is their proof for this to establish that it has no relevance? I mean, they say, we know that the United States are doing a good job and they are only prosecuting Assange out of the goodness of their hearts because a U.S. federal prosecutor told us so. And Mr. Assange never accused them of being dishonest.
Hmm.
I mean, when you, I find this really incredible because I was there in the courtroom when this prosecutor, his name is Kronberg. So he's an AUSA, he's a special federal prosecutor for the United States. And he is absolutely 100% being dishonest. I thought that was obvious through the fact that, you know, Assange's team are bringing up all of this behavior by the U.S. government, the fact that they've tried to subvert Assange's defenses by spying on his lawyers and his conversations. And for some reason, the British judges don't think it's relevant. And they think that Mr. Kronberg is an honorable man and that he's doing his prosecution against Assange just, you know, because it's the right thing, the legal thing to do.
Hmm. I said I was going to get you out of here a second ago. I have one more question, which
it's okay. I'm more than happy to talk about this.
Well, it just occurred to me, we heard a report from the Wall Street Journal in an exclusive report about a week ago that this ruling was coming down to some sort of a plea agreement was going to be worked out, where the Assange team would then plea to mishandling classified information. It would be sort of a lesser offense and all of that. The Assange team, to my knowledge, said that there's no truth to that. The Wall Street Journal said this is an exclusive report. Does today's ruling shed light to say that the Wall Street Journal was full of shit?
Yes, it does. Yeah, unless there's we have to be very clear about this, because the United States, this is the second administration that's pursuing this case. I mean, Donald Trump and Mike Pompeo are the ones who launched this attack on the press. Joe Biden and the Democrats have continued what Trump begun, and Joe Biden had 4 years to drop the case. He's not going to do that, especially in an election year. And again, looking at this ruling, it's just like regurgitating these same old lies against Julian about trying to endanger the lives of informants. Which, by the way, just to go back to that point very briefly. The U.S. Army investigated this themselves when they were court-martialing Chelsea Manning, and they found no evidence of it. So, I don't understand why the British judges don't grasp this point, that what America is accusing Julian Assange of was disproved by the American government. In any case, the idea that Julian Assange would be given some sort of like a misdemeanor or that they would bring the charges down. I mean, he's being hit with 175 years in total if we put these charges together. So even if you go down, like how far can you go down from 175? If they go down to 10 years, they will just make their case look ridiculous. All this effort for what? And I think it would be a mistake for Julian's team to accept any agreement, because when I was in the hearing in London 2 weeks ago, the judges themselves asked the American lawyers, is there anything stopping the American courts from slapping Assange with new charges the second he lands in America? And the American lawyers themselves said no. And there's nothing stopping them from giving him the death penalty. There's nothing stopping them from denying him First Amendment rights. This is the American lawyers admitting this. Just to be clear, by the way, they're not actually from the United States, but they represent the United States government. They're British, though. But anyway, it's really shocking. So I wouldn't trust what the U.S. government say. They can change the charges immediately when he's in the U.S. And the conditions he will be put in as well. He'll go first to Alexandria prison. He'll be put in administrative detention, which is ADSEG. It's basically isolation. And then when he's absolutely convicted, which is guaranteed, even though he didn't do anything, they'll send him down to Colorado to ADX Florence, and then over there he'll be put in what are called SAMs. These are special administrative measures. And the warden of that prison, he said that basically once you go inside, you will never see the sun again, and it is hell on earth. So, these are the confirmed prisons and locations and conditions that await Julian Assange. And I think it's so preposterous that we're even contemplating this, that we give this to another human being who is accused of journalism. And then, of course, how can we call ourselves democracies when we do this to journalists? Even if the case is dropped this minute, he's suffered 10 years of persecution. We can never take that back. So it reflects so poorly on all of us, and our governments, most of all, without question.
Yeah, without question. Amen. Richard Medhurst, it's a great having you here on Redacted for the first time. Been a fan of your work for a long time, and it's been great to have you here and really educate us on this. We appreciate it.
Thank you. I hope to be back again. It's a pleasure.
Thanks, Richard. Really appreciate it. And our audience said yes. Wow, what a collaboration having Richard here. So yeah, great to see you, Richard. Thank you so much. Really appreciate his perspective. By the way, someone just mentioned here a minute ago, and I caught it in the chat, someone said, the name of the ship that hit the bridge in Baltimore is named the Dali, D-A-L-I, right? Like Salvador Dali. D- Dali painted a painting called Broken Bridge. I mean, you can't make this up. This is a Dali painting called Broken Bridge. Okay. What kind of weird, world do we live in? Coincidences are, I don't believe in coincidences, but wow, very strange. All right, we've got more news to get to here on your Tuesday. We're going to look at P. Diddy and a lot of the details that are coming out about that. So you might need to take a shower after this next segment. Ugh, we'll get to that in a second. But first, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you hate crappy coffee? I, for one, really can't stand crappy coffee. I will drink it sometimes just because, like, it's there. It's like a necessity, but I hate it. But when you have some delicious coffee, it's a game changer. And we want to introduce you to 1775 Coffee Company. In 1775, the world awakened to a new era. Now, 1775 Coffee Company is bringing you a coffee that embodies that revolutionary spirit. Crafted with passion, precision, their beans are ethically and exclusively sourced from the finest coffee farms. 1775 Coffee's farm-to-cup journey ensures the highest quality, authenticity, and sustainability from start to finish. With each sip, your palate will recognize, appreciate the dedication and passion that goes into crafting the single-sourced brew. They take pride in offering their customers a truly exceptional coffee experience with their premium coffee selection delivered right to your door. So choose 1775 Coffee by going to 1775coffee.com/redacted. So it's right there on your screen. You need to type the numbers out, 1775coffee.com/redacted. Use the code redacted to get 10% off at checkout for your first order. 1775 Coffee's brewed to perfection, crafted with revolution. So get your 10% off. I love these guys. Check them out and try it and have them delivered right to your door. Stop with the woke coffee companies, by the way. I saw coffee, it was like a coffee store the other day on their scale when you were like checking out. It said, please refer to our staff members by their pronouns. Thank you. We all use different pronouns. Please refer to our staff as they, them. And that was like written right there. What would you guys do if you were at a coffee shop like that? Would you ever go back? I would not.
I don't even know if I would notice. I don't pay attention to that. I just get my damn coffee. That's all I want.
What about the coffee shop that did a 20% man tax? You remember that one?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Went out of business.
Yeah, I was going to say they went under.
All right, let's talk about P. Diddy. Let's talk about Diddy. So is there a Diddy client list? Just like the Epstein list. Diddy's, of course, allegedly the Epstein of the rap world, and a lot of powerful people running nervous today throughout Hollywood and in Washington. I bet they are. So last night, Homeland Security officials raided the Los Angeles home of rapper and music mogul Sean Diddy Combs, and then also in Miami. Simultaneously, coast to coast, they swooped in. In Miami, they had to use boats to come, as well as their armored vehicles. And they did the same in Los Angeles, and all in connection to this massive sex trafficking investigation. Here's how the news broke on Wolf Blitzer.
Breaking news. The Department of Homeland Security has just confirmed to CNN that federal law enforcement agents have raided properties owned by musician and producer Sean Diddy Combs.
Yeah. So right now he's involved in 5 different lawsuits, civil lawsuits. And he denies wrongdoing in any of them, of course. He says, quote, let me be absolutely clear. I did not do any of the awful things being alleged. I will fight for my name, my family, and for the truth, he says. One of the lawsuits revealed today has Prince Harry involved in the lawsuit. Why is Prince Harry named in the lawsuit? And would apparently go to Diddy's sex trafficking parties on a regular basis. So this could be more headaches for the royal family. Here's a part of the lawsuit.
Is that him with Kate Middleton? I'm still trying to figure out who Kate Middleton is.
That's Kate Middleton on the right. Yeah, that's the new AI generator. That's when you type in Kate Middleton into Google Gemini, you'll get a black P. Diddy. That's how it works. So among the specific acts in the lawsuit were Combs' use of vast sums of cash, drugs, faked promises of career opportunities, access to music industry executives, and circumstances that could have prompted defendants, including Universal Music Group and other employees, to specifically raise questions about Combs' sex trafficking. Affiliation with or sponsorship of Mr. Combs' sex trafficking parties garnered legitimacy and access to celebrities such as famous athletes, political figures, artists, musicians, international dignitaries like British royal Prince Harry. And people were forced to sign NDAs prior to entering his parties and prior to being drugged and sex trafficked at these parties, according to the lawsuit that was just filed. So we have that piece of it. So when you start to peel back this law, I think it's very important as we kind of unpack this Diddy story over the next few weeks and we look more deeply into this, to remember that he is probably a low-level guy in this. I think it's probably safe to say that it goes way higher. And I think it's safe to say that he's probably taking the fall, falling on a sword right now. Yes, involved in some awful things, allegedly. But it goes much higher than him. And so who can we throw out there like Jeffrey Epstein to fall on the sword and then have everything squashed, hidden, put away so that we don't know the details of it? He, of course, hated Trump, P. Diddy did, wanted to go. So it's very weird that they would eat one of their own, isn't it? Like, he's very much a pro-Biden guy. He loved President Obama. So it's very odd. Something is very, very odd about the whole thing. Thinks that we should do away with President Trump, that he should be banished. So there's a long history, though, of like young individuals who've now grown up and they've talked about their experiences spending time as a young person, underage, being sort of brought into these sex parties and these environments at Diddy's home. Almost like they were orphans in a way. Usher, who of course just sang at the Super Bowl halftime show, I was on Howard Stern's show talking all about this. We talked about all of the weird times that he had, and he was brought in at a young age to hang out with Diddy and got to see a lot of things. So watch this really awkward exchange and pay attention to the subtexts here.
Moved to New York City. And I lived with Sean Puffy Combs for a year.
That's the crazy thing. Now, that was L.A. Reid's idea, right? We're sending you over to something called Puffy Flavor Camp.
There you go.
To learn
Flavor
some...
Flavor Camp!
Yeah,
Flavor
that's
camp.
What it was called. And you're going to go to Puff Daddy's.
He's
gonna
In the 90s. Do you understand what that's like?
Puffy's place was, like, just filled with chicks and orgying, like, nonstop, right?
No, not really. Hey, it was curious. I got a chance to see some things.
Yeah, but you were 13. What were you seeing?
I went there to see the lifestyle.
Right.
And I saw it. And it was... I don't know if I could indulge and understand what I was even looking at. It was pretty wild. It was,
so nobody tried to, you know, some woman didn't come along.
I didn't say that.
Okay.
I didn't say that. What I did say is that there were very curious things taking place.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't necessarily understand it.
Uh-huh.
Biggie Smalls was there.
Lil Kim, Craig Mack.
All these people are hanging around.
Faith Evans. Jodeci, Mary
okay?
J. Blige. They didn't know nothing about this shit.
Oh.
I was having a good time. You know what I mean?
13 years old. There have been many weird young children encounters that Diddy himself has filmed over the years. Like, for instance, this... Well, we'll play... I want to play this Justin Bieber thing here in a second, which we'll show you here. But the Justin Bieber's father-in-law, Stephen Baldwin, just posted a video on Instagram today calling out the demonic tough guys and, quote, bitches in Hollywood that hide behind their accounts after the news broke of the raid on Diddy's home. It's a very odd video, but we'll show you why, maybe not so odd, in just a second when we show you very young Justin Bieber in just a moment. So this is Justin Bieber's father-in-law posting a video calling out demonic tough guys. Does he know, okay, this something bigger is about to go down? That this is just one small piece of the puzzle. It's much bigger than Puff Daddy. Watch.
This is a comment about some of the comments, which I rarely comment, but since some folks have chosen to be obviously demonic. Therefore, it's not their fault. So I'm here just to share a beautiful message of hope, unconditional love, and peace. To all of the haters out there, God bless you. Pray for your enemies. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And remember, when I see you on the street, if you slap me in the face, I will turn the other cheek. But if I feel that second cheek stinging, you better run.
What?
Was that Encino Man?
I'm speechless.
I've interviewed Steven. I've had him in the studio, and he's
he needs the cowboy up.
He was kind to me. He didn't slap me. I don't know what was going on there. If you see me on the street and you slap me, you better be prepared. I'm gonna slap you right back. So Justin Bieber, in a famous, now famous video, I'm going to make it famous here by showing it, the young Justin Bieber talking about this weird sort of Diddy summer camp excursion that sort of Usher was just talking about and others have talked about and what's going on here. But here's that video you can see with Justin Bieber.
Justin, you ever seen the movie 48 Hours? Right now he's having 48 hours with Diddy, him and his boy. They're having the times of their lives, where we hanging out and what we doing. We can't really disclose, but it's definitely a 15-year-old's dream. I have been given custody of him. Signed to Usher.
I'm signed to Usher.
I had legal guardianship of Usher when he did his first album. I did Usher's first album. I don't have legal guardianship of him, but for the next 48 hours, he's with me. So, and we gonna go full, buck full crazy.
We're going crazy.
Yeah, I'm going crazy. I'm just gonna say whatever he's saying because he's the adult and I'm just a kid, so I don't know what the hell we're doing. Mr. Diddy, what does buck full crazy actually mean? Because I thought this was like a summer camp. I don't know what the hell we're doing here, but what are we doing? What does buck full crazy even mean? So now photos have emerged of P. Diddy Combs with Rachel Chandler, who's of course been linked to Jeffrey Epstein, Bill Clinton, Prince Andrew, several other of the associates. Here you can see Rachel Chandler saying, "I'm 14 years old" in this photo. Here she is, 14 years old. And here is Bill Clinton. You can see Bill Clinton here with Rachel as well. You can see that. And then Prince Andrew as well, which I'll need to get here if you don't have it, Philip. Do you have it or no?
I don't have it.
Okay.
No, I read it as a picture of four things.
That's okay. Let me just take it back to me real quick and I'll get it here. So there's Bill Clinton. And let me just pull this up here. And here is, of course, hold on one second. There we go. There's Prince Andrew with Rachel as well and Ghislaine Maxwell there. So, wow, that's a connection, right? The Epstein connection, the Bill Clinton connection, the Prince Andrew connection. All with this Rachel.
You just said she who should not be named.
Oh, Ghislaine Maxwell. Yeah. Yeah, there was a time
YouTube
when you mentioned her
saying that name.
When you say that name, oof, you know what happens to YouTube videos. Oh my gosh. So look, we should be clear again, he hasn't been charged with anything yet on the criminal side. He hasn't been arrested. And when they showed up at his houses, they went in, took out massive loads of electronics and cardboard boxes, and they just kept filling it up. Two of his sons were at one location in, I believe it was Los Angeles, when they were handcuffed and brought out as well of the house. He was not at home, and TMZ caught up with him at the airport where he was about to board his private jet when the Department of Homeland Security rolled up on him, and so he wasn't going anywhere. His jet then left from Los Angeles, was flying, and didn't include P. Diddy. So he is not on board that jet. It did arrive in Antigua, according to reports, Antigua and Barbados, Antigua and Barbuda. And in Antigua, so a lot of people wondering, like, well, now it's grounded in Antigua. Did it fly off to Cape Verde? Is it going there as a non-extradition country, something? And did were there things on board that they were trying to hide and get it out of country so they couldn't be extradited? Who knows? That's what some people are speculating, that there were things on board that plane, not Diddy himself, but maybe important pieces of information. Who knows? That's pure speculation. We have no confirmation of that. But we do know that he wasn't on board. We do know that he was seen then in Miami, and the Department of Homeland Security rolled up on him, and his flight wasn't going anywhere. But he hasn't been arrested at this hour, to our knowledge. And what will they be looking for? According to, of course, law enforcement officials, you don't go to this phase of an investigation unless you, this is like the end of the investigation, basically. Like, you've done all of, you've heard all the reports, you've heard all the reports of sex trafficking, you've heard eyewitness testimony, you've seen the evidence, you've seen pieces of evidence, and now you're going into the home to confirm a lot of those pieces at the end. And that's what this is about. But again, no arrest yet. No handcuffs. What's going to come of it? He maintains his innocence, he's posted. That he has haters who just want to get into his pocket, he said. But there's a long history here of his family and its relationship in weird ways to the CIA. Diddy's father, Melvin Combs, famously worked for Frank Lucas. And his father, Melvin Combs, there he is. Diddy's father was a drug dealer. He was a drug dealer. Who ran, and he worked for Frank Lucas. Frank Lucas, of course, who ran heroin for the CIA. Now, Frank Lucas was, of course, the heroin king, worked for the CIA, ran money, ran heroin for the CIA, and, yes, worked with Melvin Combs. So Frank Lucas was then, of course, turned into a film, and you might even know the name. Many eagle-eyed observers might be aware of who Frank Lucas was played, and that was Denzel Washington. Played him in the movie American Gangster. So he played Frank Lucas, who was friends with Diddy's father. Here is the drug king, Frank, talking about working with P. Diddy's father, Melvin, and how he's upset that he got shot. He ended up getting shot in a botched drug raid or a handoff of drugs, and he got shot. He was the wrong person to get shot. I think they were trying to go after Frank Lucas. He got shot instead. Listen to him talking about this.
I'm Ray Lucas. This is my dad, Frank Lucas. And shout out to Vlad TV. Thanks for setting up this interview.
Me and Melvin Cohen were good friends. We did a lot of business together. Of course, it was not a legal business, but we did a lot of business together. And I was sorry to see what happened to him. That shot the hell out of me. Mm-hmm. And the guy who did it, I'm glad he got what he got. Mm-hmm. Okay, so.
And I know Melvin used to come to your club, the Turntable, a lot.
Yes, he did. He come there all the time. Melvin was like a lady man. Yeah, he come there all the time. He come to my club all the time. Yes, he did.
Can you say the name of your club?
The Lord Price Turntable, 52nd and Broadway. I met Sean Cohn. I met him when he was a little boy. He used to come over to my house. His daddy used to bring him over to my house. He used to come see me on various businesses, and he used to bring him over to my house.
Yeah. So the story gets thicker. And it'd be really interesting to know what the CIA connection is, if there is any, and what sort of dirt Diddy has on a lot of other people right now, and is he taking the fall for a lot of other people who are hoping and praying that the light of day doesn't come out in this? As Breitbart News reported, several sexual assault lawsuits have been filed against Combs in recent months, including a lawsuit from R&B singer Cassie that was settled last year. Another one of Combs' accusers was a woman who said the rap producer raped her 2 decades ago when she was 17. Of course, Combs, again, has denied all the allegations, says they're sickening allegations, and they're people trying to make a pretty penny off of him, a quick payday. And a male music producer also accused Diddy of sexually assaulting him, forcing him to have sex with prostitutes. He's denied those claims as well. So I think we're going to see a lot of information, although it'll be interesting to see if it's similar to the Epstein saga, where we don't get to see a client list. We don't get to see who signed NDAs. We don't get to see the names of these people that have come to these, you know, sex trafficking parties. But we do know from the Department of Homeland Security, this is a sex trafficking ring that they're trying to bust up here. How deeply does it go, and how and where does it go?
When did you see the updates
on
Twitter
that right now that
left the country?
What'd you say?
He left the country. He flew to, he landed in Antigua. People are speculating that he's going to Cape Verde because they have no extradition treaty with the United States. Now, that part isn't verified, but they did verify he did land in Antigua yesterday and did, in fact, leave the country.
Okay. Well, I didn't see that he left. He made it to Antigua. What I saw, according to reports, is that he was in Miami, and TMZ verified that with video of him at the airport when the DHS rolled up on him and said, "You're not going anywhere." So apparently the plane, I mean, unless there's new information of him making it to Antigua, the plane made it to Antigua, but he wasn't on it because the plane left from Los Angeles and went over his location and didn't even land in Miami. So I'm not exactly sure where that information is coming from, but it'd be interesting to see. I've seen conflicting reports about him being in Antigua or not. But according to TMZ, he was in Miami. Maybe he somehow made it to Antigua. I don't know. But the latest report that I saw is that he was rolled up on by Department of Homeland Security in Miami. So, again, I don't know if that's old. Those are old photos or not, or if he's been then stuck in Antigua. And he's because Antigua has an extradition treaty with the United States. So it's not like he's, if they want him, they're going to get him in Antigua. This is not a big deal. And there are, and even in Cape Verde, I know people are like, there's no extradition treaty. Cape Verde has a relationship with the United States, and they absolutely would be able to transfer a criminal back and forth. So there's no, the only, like, he'd be safe maybe going to, like, Ghana. Literally, like, there's, like, a few places, or maybe Russia. Like, that's about it. But Cape Verde, no. The United States would get him back in a heartbeat, and also, too, in Antigua and Barbuda. So it doesn't really matter where he is. They will get him. Sam Bankman-Fried, you want to be in the Bahamas? It doesn't matter. They will get you. They will get you wherever they want to find you. That's what will happen. By the way, we should mention that last photo I showed inadvertently. I said that was Rachel Chandler also. I meant to say that was Virginia Dufresne. So just to be clear on that last photo with Prince Andrew, the point was showing all of these guys with these like 14-year-old girls. And they all look very, very similar. So Rachel Chandler in with P. Diddy and then Bill Clinton, Virginia Dufresne with the photo with Prince Andrew. So just to be clear and correct that there. So I don't know, guys. I feel like this is like go ahead, Philip.
I'd like to point out just as a prediction that P. Diddy did not kill himself.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like the type that he would do that, right? He doesn't seem the type that would suicide.
No, but you know, a lot of the people that, you know, quote unquote, do probably weren't the type of people that would do it either.
Yeah.
So I'm just getting ahead of that one before he Epstein's himself.
Yeah. So Newsweek says no, Diddy has not landed in Antigua. So, and this is coming from the prime minister, the Caribbean island of Antigua. No, he's not in Antigua. So just to be clear about that, he's not there. So I think he is still in Miami, according to the data that I saw and reports that I saw. But his jet...
Yeah, 'cause on Twitter, they're like tracking his plane. So his plane did land in Antigua, and then they said there was no proof that it went on to Cape Verde or whatever. But
yeah,
so his plane must have, but he must not have been on it then.
Yeah. Yep, yep. So let us know your thoughts on this. This is just the beginning of this story, folks. This is just the beginning. We're about to peel back some real serious stuff. Where does it lead to? You know, these other members of Hollywood right now, there's a lot of people that are scared, and there's other people saying that there's he's here, and there's a woman who's even stronger up here, and a lot of people are speculating.
As Candace Owens pointed out, she said this is they're not necessarily there to gather evidence, they're there to hide it.
Who's they? Oh, meaning the police or the Department of Homeland?
The Department of Justice is not there to gather evidence but to hide it, because this probably leads to the same people on the Epstein list. It's probably just a trickle down of that, and we will never see justice for those girls. We'll never see justice for those people in most cases, and those people will be protected still.
Yeah. Sad, but true. Right. We would probably know information pretty quickly if they're going to let us know, like, why this massive investigation, multiple raids across the world, across the country, multiple locations using the Department of Homeland Security. I also thought it was really interesting. Think how many different pieces of the military we have now, different law enforcement arms of the United States government. Like, where was the FBI in this? No, it's the Department of Homeland Security running this operation. Like, okay. Now we have the IRS with a law enforcement division that's growing under Biden. So the Department of Homeland Security. Glad they got this, by the way. Glad they're finally tackling the sex trafficking industry in the United States, something we've been, you know, talking about here on the show for years, that it seems like they don't care about, because, by the way, the Department of Homeland Security is facilitating actively. I think it's just totally ironic. Literally our open border and the sex trafficking operation that's pouring across our southern border right now. And they're facilitating it and allowing it to happen with NGOs. Just go back to my interview just a short time ago that we just did tonight with J.J. Carroll. It's happening. They're doing it. And yet they're going after Puff Daddy for sex trafficking in a massive sting operation.
It's like they did with drugs, like they do with anything. They don't go after the source. They don't go after the end user. They go after the middle. Like they because that's the people. You know, the people in the middle are the ones that they can arrest easily. They don't have to worry about them having either a ton of money or just, you know, it's just like that's what they want to do. They don't want to go for the top. They don't want to find out who the people are that, like, with the sex trafficking. They don't actually want to grab the people that are on the end, the end user, so to speak. You know, they just want the people in the middle because they're easily replaceable and everything can continue as usual.
Yeah, it's really troubling. They can go after him and they can do this big. You know, by the way, it was also interesting, like, why did the Sky Fox News helicopter? I used to work in Los Angeles and I was actually in charge when I first started in the news business. I was in charge of the helicopter. It was my job as a producer back in the day. And I never got a phone call at the news desk, like, alerting me that you should go over to P. Diddy's house right now, get the helicopter up, and you might want to come over this way. Those helicopters were up in the air both in Miami and in Los Angeles. And they were right over the homes when this was happening. Who tipped them off about that? That's interesting, right? Did the Department of Homeland Security give a little tip? You might want to head down to P. Diddy's home, because there might be some action there in a few minutes, and we want to have cameras. We want to make an example of them. Both locations, they had helicopters ready to go. Interesting. Let us know your thoughts on this. That's what we know at this hour, but we're just starting to peel the onion back on this stinky, stinky thing. Hey, we have a newsletter, but we also have a community, our Redacted Plus community, and we'd love for you to sign up and be a member there. Just for like a price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can join our Redacted membership program and get access to exclusive interviews, content that other people won't see, and you'll get access to interviews before anyone else gets to see them, days ahead of time. And we have our book club. We're going to be doing some special live streams and with our audience there, so we can just hang out just for members only. But again, you know, we're supported by you. We're not supported by big government. We're not supported by big pharma. We're not supported by Pfizer or anybody like that. We are supported by you and the few sponsors we have here on the show. So if you'd like to come over to Redacted and redacted.inc and join our Plus Club, we'd love to have you as a private member. Again, redacted.inc, and you can sign up for, like, I think it's $5 a month, and you can go up from there if you'd like, but that's how cheap it is. And if you want to support independent journalism and what we do here. So thank you guys so much for joining us tonight. Natalie will be back tomorrow night. I know you guys missed her terribly, as have I. I heard her just arrive, so I'm going to go down and say hi to her right now. Thanks to all of you guys. Much love to you guys for joining us tonight. Thank you for subscribing and to being a part of our show on Rumble, on YouTube, and on X. Much love to all of you guys. We'll see you back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Have a great night, everyone.